right. All right, Clifford, I got, like, close to no notes, so I think we can just fly through this one.
Oh, boy. Okay, I'm excited.
Okay.
Might that mean no Cliff's notes?
Correct. Yeah. Well, do you? How bad do you want to do it?
No, no, I'm just making sure that our audience is braced for an episode without Cliff's notes. They might be confused, yeah. Not know what's going on.
Oh.
You never know. I'm trying to orient people.
All right, well, yeah, let's jump in.
Okay,
so they go,
whoa, hold on, all right, hold on. So what are we doing today?
We gotta jump in, Clifford. We're on chapter 9, book 4, Two Towers, Shelob's Lair. We gotta
that's
go.
What I wanted this, I wanted the little
this
intro.
this whole book's moving. No thoughts, how you felt, like, we're just going for it.
okay.
All right, so they walk a mile. Gollum's in front, the hobbits stand side by side. They come to the tunnel. And it smells awful. What's the line there?
Out of it came a stench, not the sickly odor of decay in the meads of Morgul, but a foul reek, as if filth unnameable were piled and hoarded in the dark within.
Okay, all right. That's sad. So Gollum's been in the tunnel before, but he doesn't reveal the name of it is, what's the name?
Torek Ungol, Shelob's Lair.
Yeah, all right. Okay, so Sam's wondering how Gollum even endured the smell. And Gollum says he made it through, and it's the only way, and he's pretty snarky with Sam about that comment. Sam kind of deserves it, honestly. Mm-hmm. So we got our first decent-sized quote here.
Okay.
Why don't you start us off?
Okay. Drawing a deep breath, they passed inside. In a few steps, they were in utter and impenetrable dark. Not since the lightless passage of Moria had Frodo or Sam known such darkness. And if possible, here it was deeper and denser. There were airs moving, and echoes, and a sense of space. Here the air was still, stagnant, heavy, and sound fell dead. They walked as if it were in a black vapor, wrought of veritable darkness itself. As it was breathed, brought blindness not only to the eyes but to the mind. So that even the memory of colors and of forms and of any light faded out of thought. Night always had been and always would be, and night was all.
But for a while they could still feel, and indeed the senses of their feet and fingers at first seemed sharpened almost painfully. The walls felt, to their surprise, smooth, and the floor, save for the step now and again, was straight and even, going ever up at the same stiff slope. The tunnel was high and wide, so wide that the hobbits walked abreast, only touching the side walls with their outstretched hands. They were separated, cut off alone in the darkness. Gollum had gone in first and seemed to be only a few paces ahead. While they were still able to give heed to such things, they could hear his breath hissing and gasping just in front of them. But after a time, their senses became duller. Both touch and hearing seemed to grow numb, and they kept on, groping, walking, on and on, mainly by force of will with which they had entered, will to go through and desire to come out at last to the high gate beyond. All right, quickly, thoughts on that section?
I mean, sounds like a bad place, without a doubt. But the dulling of the senses is really interesting. It's almost like it's poisoning them or something.
Yeah.
And notably, this combined with that note from before, the smell was compared to Morgul, but this was different than the meads of Morgul. It's this unnameable filth. I think it's interesting that we're getting very distinct contrasts with other bad places that we've been to before.
Other one was Moria. This seems even darker, even though that was extremely, extremely dark.
Right.
And then also the only other thing I want to mention is, all right, two mentions so far of them walking side by side. I remember that always coming up whenever I read this, and I think it's...
Yeah, that's a good point.
Potentially significant.
Most of the... a good portion of the book, they always walk in a line, right? They're always following each other for one reason or another.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there will be one more mention of it, so let's touch on it there, but let's keep going, because, you know, this whole thing, just to... The reason that we're going fast with this is partially because we can, and second of all, because... This whole thing is basically one action-packed scene. There's like maybe one or two places where it slows down for a couple seconds.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, they're keeping their hand on the side of the wall And suddenly they feel that the wall vanishes from there and there's a different draft of air coming through. So they can tell that there's different passageways along this. But they keep going straight up what seems to be the main one, and it's still just steadily going up. And they pass three or four other side entrances at least.
Mm-hmm.
You want to take that next thing?
But how long was it? How much more of this would they have to endure? Or could they endure? The breathlessness of the air was growing as they climbed, and now they seemed often in the blind dark to sense some resistance thicker than the foul air. As they thrust forward, they felt things brush against their heads or against their hands. Long tentacles or hanging growths, perhaps. They could not tell what they were. And still, the stench grew. It grew until almost it seemed to them that the smell was the only clear sense left to them, and that was for their torment. 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. How many had passed in this lightless hole? Hours, days, weeks rather. Sam felt at the tunnel side and shrank towards Frodo, and their hands met and clasped, and so together they went on. They still went on. At length, Frodo, groping along the left-hand wall, came suddenly to a void. He almost fell sideways into the emptiness. Here was some opening in the rock far wider than any they had passed, and out of it came a reek so foul and a sense of lurking malice so intense that Frodo reeled, and at that moment Sam too lurched and fell forwards. Fighting off both sickness and fear, Frodo gripped Sam's hand. Up, he said in a hoarse breath, without voice. It all comes from here, the stench and the peril. Now for it, quick.
Calling up his remaining strength and resolution, he dragged Sam to his feet and forced his own limbs to move. Sam stumbled beside him, one step, two steps, three steps, at last six steps. Maybe they had passed the dreadful unseen opening, but whether that was so or not, suddenly, it was easier to move, as if some hostile will for the moment had released them. They struggled on, still hand in hand. But almost at once, they came to a new difficulty. The tunnel forked, or so it seemed, and in the dark they could not tell which was the wider way, or which way kept nearer to straight. Which should they take, the left or the right? They knew of nothing to guide them, yet a false choice would certainly be fatal. Which way has Gollum gone? Panted Sam. And why didn't he wait?
Smeagol, said Frodo, trying to call. Smeagol! But his voice was croaked, and the name felt dead almost as it left his lips. There was no answer, not an echo, not even a tremor of the air.
He's really gone this time, I fancy, muttered Sam. I guess this is just exactly where he meant to bring us. Gollum, if ever I lay my hands on you again, you'll be sorry for it.
Presently, groping and fumbling in the dark, they found that the opening on the left was blocked. Either it was a blind, or else some great stone had fallen in the passage. This can't...
I think we're good, actually. Sorry. Yeah. Alright, okay. What do we think of that? It seems like they got past the worst part of it.
Yes, perhaps. Or they've just entered the epicenter. Hard to say.
Well, I think they got past the worst of it because it feels easier to go.
Right, right.
It doesn't smell as bad, but they do have a challenge that they're in a fork in the road, and it seems like Gollum has totally abandoned them at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Clever writing by Tolkien where he just sucks you in for two pages and you don't even notice that Gollum's gone.
Right.
He gives like one last thing that's like, yeah, he was breathing in front of him, and then all of a sudden their senses dull and he hasn't come up again until it's like, oh, shoot, this is exactly...
And we're also getting a strong, eerie sense that there's something else going on inside these tunnels, right?
Yeah, yeah, well, yeah. It's hard to do this without knowing, but...
Of course.
Yeah, for sure.
In this void that they passed, out of it came a reek so foul and a sense of lurking malice so intense that Frodo reeled. So, lurking malice... Doesn't explicitly state anything going on there, but it's like the caves are alive in some way.
Yeah, so at this point, too, not only side by side, they're holding hands. And at that point, it's got to just be practical when it's that dark.
Right.
You know? I mean, it's like, yeah, you hold hands to make sure you don't get separated.
Mm-hmm. Especially if your senses are totally dulled, you know?
Right, right. And I think that's significant. Obviously, easiest symbolism is you don't have to go at this by yourself. You got somebody right by your side to help you out.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like somebody's leading you. It's like they're, you know, side by side implies equal. Yeah, I don't know, thoughts?
Yeah, I imagine almost like maybe soldiers, like two people like marching arm in arm or side by side. Like it's kind of like a symbol of solidarity and a front.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I sort of envision.
Yeah. So they figure out that the left fork is actually blocked. So obviously they go the other way. Mm-hmm. They start to move down, but then they heard a horrible sound behind them. "It's a trap," said Sam, and he laid his hand upon the hilt of his sword. And as he did so, he thought of the darkness of the barrow whence it came. "I wish old Tom was near us now," he thought. Then he stood, darkness about him and a blackness of despair and anger in his heart. It seemed to him that he saw a light in his mind, almost unbearably bright. At first, as a ray of sun to the eyes of one long hidden in a windowless pit. Then the light became color, green, gold, silver, white. Far off, as if in a little picture drawn by elven fingers, he saw the Lady Galadriel standing on the grass of Lorien, and the gifts were in her hands. "And you, Ringbearer," he heard her say, remote but clear, "for you I have prepared this." The bubbling hiss drew nearer, and there was a creaking as of some great jointed thing that moved with slow purpose in the dark. A reek came on before it. "Master, master," cried Sam, and life and urgency came back into his voice. "The lady's gift, the starglass, a light to you in dark places. She said it was to be. The starglass."
"The starglass?" muttered Frodo, as of one answering out of sleep, hardly comprehending. "Why, yes, why, I had forgotten it. A light when all other lights go out. And now, indeed, light alone can help us." Slowly, his hand went to his bosom, and slowly he held aloft the phial of Galadriel. For a moment it glimmered, faint as a rising star struggling in heavy earthward mists, and then as its power waxed and hope grew in Frodo's mind, it began to burn and kindled to a silver flame, a minute heart of dazzling light, as though Arendil had himself come down from the high sunset paths with the last simril upon his brow. The darkness receded from it until it seemed to shine in the center of a globe of airy crystal, and the heart that held it sparkled with white fire. Frodo gazed in wonder at this marvelous gift that he had so long carried, not guessing its full worth and potency. Seldom had he remembered it on the road until they came to Morgul Vale, and never had he used it for fear of revealing its light. "Aya Arendil Alenyan Akalima," he cried, and knew not what he had spoken, for it seemed that another voice spoke through his, clear, untroubled by the foul air of the pit.
All right, that was a cool scene. Again, let's always just keep this stuff brief, but what'd you think of that?
Pretty cool. Sam, yeah. Sam coming in very practical, handy here, remembering like, "Hey, Frodo, mm-hmm. you got a flashlight on you," sort of thing. But but a great reminder that he's like, it seems like Sam has a vision almost, like something planted a vision for him, and it summons up some sort of power for Frodo.
Well, it started as Tom. You know, he wishes Tom Bombadil was there, just like, actually, Sam was asleep in the burrow way. But anyways, Frodo was wishing Tom was there, and then he did show up, and then Sam would have woken up by seeing him. I think, no, actually, they might have dragged him out. Anyways, Sam was in the barrow way. That was probably their original evil dark place. You know, we had the barrow way, we had Moria, we definitely have this, maybe there's more that we're forgetting. Mm-hmm. But, you know, at this point, no. Now he's older. You know, now it's like, you guys, we talked about in the last chapter how Sam literally realizes they're on a hero's journey. They've matured. They're past where magical Tom Bombadil, ultimate gets you out of trouble, easy get out of jail free card guy comes up. Like they don't have that luxury anymore.
Right.
And they don't need that luxury anymore because they're older. They're stronger themselves, as they've proven throughout this book. And they also have other gifts that they can rely on, gifts given exactly for these kinds of times, which is what this file was, right? File, super cool. I think they said it's almost as good as having a Silmaril in your hand,
mm-hmm.
which after, if you've listened to all the episodes of the show, you know that that's a very big deal.
Yeah.
And pretty awesome. So,
indeed.
Yeah. And then the last thing I wanted to say was, what did you think of the Elvish that you had to read? Also, nice stab at it.
Thank you. I didn't recognize any of the words besides Arendil. And we've heard Arendil before. He's the how would you summarize him? The keeper of the Silmarils?
He's one of them.
Okay.
He guards one of them.
Okay. Yeah. The rest of the words I've never heard before, and I don't know what they mean.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's, well, so it's clearly like an invocation.
Okay.
Almost even like a spell to turn it on. Maybe.
Okay. Summoning the power of Arendil or something like that.
Yeah. To say turn it on like a light switch is stupid.
Right.
But part of the invocation is you invoke Arendil.
Okay.
But the more interesting part beyond just the words, because obviously this is his light, because this is light from the Mirror of Galadriel, which is that pool, which is capturing the light of Arendelle's star. And Arendelle's star is literally him in a ship sailing around the sky containing the Silmaril, and the Silmaril is what's giving off the light, just to recap that. Mm-hmm. But anyways, he says the most interesting part is Frodo says that he cried, and he knew not what he had spoken. For it seemed that another voice spoke through his, clear, untouchable by the foul air of the pit. This is a topic of conversation we've had before, but why don't you explain it?
I mean, seems like a clear evidence of divine providence. Mm-hmm. Words are being planted in his mouth. A vision. Yeah. In this case, what stood out to me is, like, it seems like it's happening to both Frodo and Sam, right? Like,
correct.
It's like,
yes,
his vision is happening to Sam that's triggering, yeah, him to remember. And then some power or something is being summoned for Frodo, which is, yeah, it's, this is maybe a more explicit instance of providence than we've seen in the past.
I would say so too, because this,
it's not like, just like, oh, some disaster was just avoided or something like that. This is like a very clear, like, protection. A fire has been lit, in a way.
Well, I mean, yeah, and like Frodo literally said something he had no idea what he meant.
Right, right.
Like, Frodo doesn't know what that saying means. You know, mm-hmm, he also, like, he would be just like you. I know I just said Arendelle, but I don't know what the other words.
Right,
mean,
right.
You know, Frodo's in that same boat. So some other voice probably spoke. If you had to guess, obviously it's more so providential. There's no point to guess, but I guess if we had to guess, it's like Galadriel or something.
Right. Would... And Galadriel's image showed up for Sam, so that's a reasonable assumption.
Right, right. It's not like she's, though, it's not like she's looking in some crystal ball or some plant here in Lothlorien and knows that she has to do some magical powers right now. This is just happening. Maybe, you know, when she gave the gifts, it's... that this would all just work out.
Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm.
But yeah, let's see. There's that next paragraph there. You want to take that one too?
Sure. But other potencies there are in Middle-earth, powers of night, and they are old and strong. And she that walked in the darkness had heard the elves cry that cry far back in the deeps of time. And she had not heeded it, and it did not daunt her now. Even as Frodo spoke, he felt a great malice bent upon him, and a deadly regard considering him. Not far down the tunnel, between them and the opening, where they had reeled and stumbled, he was aware of eyes growing visible, two great clusters of many windowed eyes. The coming menace was unmasked at last. The radiance of the star glass was broken and thrown back from their thousand facets, but behind the glitter was a pale, deadly fire, began steadily to glow within, a flame kindled in some deep pit of evil thought. Monstrous and abominable eyes they were, bestial and yet filled with purpose and with hideous delight, gloating over their prey, trapped beyond all hope of escape.
Okay, it's unfortunate that I cannot even muse on what this could be, since I know. But anyways, that's a creepy description. She is capitalized, so whatever this monstrous thing is, it's a she.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, oh boy.
I think the grammar here is worth pointing out. The way that that sentence is written, she that walked in the darkness is like her full title.
Yeah.
And then the verb comes after that. So you can think, it's almost that is the noun there. Like, she that walked in the darkness. It's not explicitly this darkness. It's not that she's walking right now, which she is walking in darkness. But there's a suggestion of something like much bigger and older, right?
Yeah, I think so. Especially because she's, you know, if you continue that sentence, had heard the elves cry, that cry far back in the deeps of time,
mm-hmm,
and she had not heeded it, and it did not daunt her now. So.
Yeah, so this is like, I mean, we almost never hear of things in Lord of the Rings where the elves, like, somebody gets to pull a fast one on the elves. Like, you know, they're kind of like, oh, orcs, they're just like a corruption of the elves or whatever it is. It's not often, yeah, that we hear, like, they're older or they're more powerful than the elves.
Yeah.
So that's,
yeah,
a big deal.
All right. So let's go on. We'll save it for people that, you know, haven't read this before, haven't seen the movies, what this is. Sam and Frodo run for it. But when they look back, they see that the eyes are leaping after them. So they're being chased down. So Frodo realizes it's no good to keep running. He stops. And what does he do? He turns around and he... Oh, you're Frodo, so, you know, he yells what?
He yells Galadriel, and he holds up the file again, and then he pulls out his sword, kind of just totally spur of the moment. When he takes out his sword, its edges of blue fire flicked. And then, holding the star aloft and the bright sword advanced, Frodo, Hobbit of the Shire, walked steadily down to meet the eyes.
They wavered. Doubt came into them as the light approached. One by one they dimmed, and slowly they drew back. No brightness so deadly had ever afflicted them before. From sun and moon and star they had been safe underground, but now a star had descended into the very earth. Still it approached, and the eyes began to quail. One by one they all went dark. They turned away, and a great bulk, beyond the light's reach, heaved its huge shadow in between. They were gone. All right. We can't even take guesses what to do. We just know. But anyways, yeah, so that's a cool moment. That's a cool line.
Yeah.
Frodo, the Hobbit of the Shire, walks steadily down to meet the eyes. You know, oh, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, he's holding the star glass, you know, right in front of him, walking with his sword, you know, getting tough, big, you know, just scare off like the wild animal, maybe like scared off like a bear, kind of, you know, is what you would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
But this light is what's doing it, because whatever this beast is, it's used to darkness and it's never seen something so bright in its life. Crazy.
Mm-hmm. You
know? And of course, just think, like, this is about as close to a Silmaril as you can get, but not being a Silmaril itself.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right. Should we keep going though?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Sam says that. Sam says the moment deserves a song to be made by the elves. May I live to tell them and hear them sing. But also, you know, he goes on. He's like, but also, you know, now's our chance to get the hell out. We gotta go. So they run away, and they run up, and they're getting away from the foul stench. And they start to smell some. They start to feel some cold, thin air from outside. But then they realize that they're blocked again. Why don't you describe the scene? It seems like they were like almost even bouncing off this thing. Like they didn't understand why they were blocked at first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I mean, as they're sprinting towards the light that they can see at the end, they just bump into something and can't figure out what it is at all.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to be alive, but it is soft. It's not stone, so it's a bit perplexing to them. Should I just go on and?
Yeah, reveal the answer.
Okay,
what is it?
Holding aloft the file, Frodo looked, and before him he saw a grayness with which the radiance of the star glass did not pierce and did not illuminate, as if it were a shadow being cast by no light could dissipate. Across the width and height of the tunnel, a vast web was spun, orderly as the web of some huge spider, but denser woven and far greater, and each thread was as thick as a rope. Sam laughed grimly.
Cobwebs, he said. Is that all? Cobwebs? But what a spider. Have at him. Down with him.
In a fury, he hewed at them with his sword, but the thread that he struck did not break. It gave a little and then sprang back like a plucked bowstring, turning the blade and tossing up both sword and arm.
Yeah, so Sam tries that a couple more times, but he, you know, at best he breaks like one of the cobwebs.
Yeah.
And it snaps. I find this kind of interesting because I'm pretty sure spiderwebs webs are actually super strong.
Yeah, they are.
So if you have like a, all right, now you probably know what this monster is. So if you have a ginormous spider and it has webs, then they're going to be bigger than the little teensy spiders that you see as webs. So like this is probably actually accurate. Like this is what it would be like.
Definitely. Yeah. I've heard comparisons that spider webs are like, it's stronger than steel in the right dimension
too.
Or something like that.
Yeah, Bear Grylls, I think, taught me that.
Nice.
I think he used it for something. But anyways, they don't have time to cut down all these webs, obviously. Frodo feels that they're still being watched, but he can't see the eyes right now. So then what does Frodo say? You want to take it there too?
Come, let us see what Sin can do. It is an elven blade. There are webs of horror in the dark ravines of Beleriand where it was forged. But you must be the guard and hold back the eyes. Here, take the star glass. Do not be afraid. Hold it up and watch.
Then Frodo stepped up to the great gray net and hewed it with a wide sweeping stroke, drawing the bitter edge swiftly across a ladder of close-strung cords and at once springing away. The blue gleaming blade shore through them like a scythe through grass, and they leaped and writhed and then hung loose. A great rent was made. All right, so very cool. So Sting could cut through these webs immediately.
Yeah.
Right? What do we know about Sting?
It's an elven sword.
Correct. All right. Let's go back. Hobbit Chapter 3 trivia. Where's Sting from?
Sting, wasn't it from the stash that they found with the trolls?
Correct, correct, correct.
That Bilbo found, I should say. Oh, Bilbo and the dwarves.
Yeah. And then they go to Rivendell, and Elrond tells them more about the swords that they found. And so these are from...
It's a dagger.
From...
Numenor?
Good guess. Gondolin. Remember that? Mm-hmm. Gondolin. Mm-hmm. Gondolin. So, elvish swords. Gondolin people. They figured out, yeah, we're going to make swords that can cut through huge spider's webs easily. Excellent. Mm. Excellent idea. Good token detail there to just get them out. Like, this isn't like kind of get them out of a pinch kind of thing where it's just like kind of crappy writing. It's like, oh, that's such a cool idea that the elf swords can just do that. I love that. Mm-hmm. Anyways, Frodo finished cutting. Beyond relieved. He's super joyful to be outside. What does it say here? It seemed light in that dark land to his eyes that had passed through the den of night. The great smokes had risen and grown thinner, and the last hours of a somber day were passing. The red glare of Mordor had died away in the sullen glow. Yet it seemed to Frodo that he looked upon a morning of sudden hope. Almost he had reached the summit of the wall, only a little higher now. The cleft, Cirith Ungol, was before him, a dim notch in the black ridge, and the horns of rock darkling in the sky on either side. A short race, a sprinter's course, and he would be through. So, you know, back to this idea of this is the last lap, you know, mm-hmm. like sprinter's race at this point. Last 100 meters, you know.
Mm-hmm. he's almost reassured. He's like, it seems like after making it through this cave, the evil of Mordor seems less bad to him.
Yeah.
The red glare of Mordor had died away. It's just gloomy. He's like, yeah, not so bad.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're going to paraphrase most of the rest of this here, but it's all the details about Frodo when you read this. It's like, what's going through his head right now? Because we're actually getting more so Sam's perspective than Frodo's. And it's like, what? It's almost like Frodo kind of loses his cool because he goes on yelling to Sam to hurry up, and his voice is very loud in the past. You know, Sam's running too, but he's obviously still weary of Shelob, but Frodo seems to just not be aware whatsoever, and he's just going. And then the narrator also reveals that Shelob has many different ways and exits from her lair. Then we get the big description of Shelob. For as far as descriptions go, and I know this bogs down people that are reading it for the first time, like they hate these kinds of things, but... This is, even from my first time reading it, this was one of my favorites because it was so creepy, so good. Yeah. Clifford, I'm going to give you the honor.
Okay.
You get to read it.
There, age-long, she had dwelt, an evil thing in spider form, even such as once of old had lived in the land of the elves in the west that is now under the sea, such as Beren fought in the mountains of Terror and Doriath, and so came to Lúthien upon the green sword, amid the hemlocks in the moonlight long ago. How Shelob came there, flying from ruin, no tale tells. For out of the dark years few tales have come. But still she was there, who was there before Sauron, and before the first stone in Barad-dûr. And she served none but herself, drinking the blood of elves and men, bloated and grown fat with endless brooding on her feasts, weaving webs with shadow, for all living things were her food, and her vomit darkness. Far and wide her lesser broods, bastards of the miserable mates, her own offspring that she slew, spread from glen to glen, from Etheldoeth to the eastern hills, to Dol Guldur and the fastness of Mirkwood. But none could rival her, Shelob the Great, the last child of Ungoliant to trouble the unhappy world. Already, years before, Gollum had beheld her, Smeagol who pried into all dark holes, and in past days he had bowed and worshipped her, and the darkness of her evil will walked through all the ways of his weariness beside him, cutting him off from the light and from regret. And he had promised to bring her food, but her lust was not his lust. Little she knew or cared for towers or rings, or anything devised by mind or hand, who only desired death for all others, mind and body, and for herself a glut of life, alone, swollen till the mountains could no longer hold her up, and the darkness could not contain her.
All right, lots there. Where do we want to start? Actually, no, sorry. I'm going to pick.
Go for it.
Okay. All right. So, did you hear that at the beginning? So, these are the same kind of spiders that lived where? In Beleriand. So, that's Silmarillion stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is... So, you remember the Beryn special? Beryn and Luthien special we did?
Mm-hmm.
When Beryn, he was an outlaw in his country when his dad and his companions got killed by the orcs.
Right.
He has to cross this super scary mountain range and then this crazy valley where Melian, she's the Maiar that lives in Doriath, and Morgoth's magic, their magic kind of basically met and it created like this super nuclear waste zone kind of thing.
Almost. Right, I remember discussing that, the weird in between.
Right,
the no man's zone.
Yeah, and so Beryn gets through this and he comes to Doriath and he crosses through the maze of Doriath, which nobody else had ever done, and he doesn't even speak about all the scary stuff that he saw. What he saw in there, though, we don't know any details, but what he saw was spiders like this, because this is where... We've also talked about her, too. We've talked about Ungoliant before. We did that in, what was it, the Token of the Eucharist special. That's where we covered it. So we don't have to do it again.
And as a reminder, Ungoliant, though, is the spider who was basically buddies with Morgoth way back.
Morgoth recruited Ungoliant in Valinor to come destroy the two trees, the light of the two trees. She sucked the light away. You know, that's what these... evil spiders do is they just it's not surprising that this whole place was darkness, you know, because it's like this isn't just darkness, this is the antithesis of anywhere where light could possibly ever be. You know, like they suck away any sort of light. And so this Shelob is a daughter of or last child of Ungoliant, and Ungoliant was the one that came with Morgoth, helped him steal the Silmarils, helped them destroy the two trees of Valinor, and then they ran back away to Middle-earth while all the Valar were sad and all the elves were sad. You know, Fëanor, he was sad too because Finwë, his dad, had just died and everything. You know, hopefully this is refreshing your memory. Go back, listen to our Fëanor episode, Token in the Eucharist special episode. We cover it in both of those. Anyways, they come back, and Ungoliant, she had wanted the Silmarils, but Morgoth escaped from her thanks to the help of his Balrogs and stuff, and she had retreated to basically those mountains that Beryn had to cross in the middle of Doriath, in the middle of Beleriand. And then her offspring, one of them Shelob, they all start moving out eventually because obviously... Actually, we mentioned it. Beleriand obviously goes underwater because, you know, it's not there on the map for Lord of the Rings time. Mm-hmm. So all the spiders... got away. You know, Bilbo, he fought the spiders in Mirkwood and stuff. These are descendants potentially of Shelob, but Shelob, you know, either way, she's a descendant of Ungoliant, which is like the archetypal evil spider. But then this is another one. Just like how Morgoth's the real bad guy and then Sauron emulates him, Shelob emulates Ungoliant. Like now they're in their own, maybe a worse thing than before.
Right, right.
Who knows?
And then also of note is that we get the suggestion, very briefly, that her own offspring live in Dol Guldur and Mirkwood. So we can assume that those are the spiders that Bilbo and the dwarves came across back in the Hobbit.
Correct. Right? Yep. Next weird thing, Gollum Smeagol found her, and he worshipped her.
Mm.
Boy, oh boy, talk about just picking bad idols left and right. First you worship the ring, then you worship this giant spider, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think it's an exaggeration when he says worshipped, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he might have literally bowed down to her and just, you know.
Yeah.
That's probably... but yeah, so that's, Gollum once again screwing up. So anyways, to go on, Sauron knows that Shelob is in this mountain pass, and he's just like, phew! This is the best guard monster I could ever ask for. I couldn't have made anything better, you know? Totally fine that she's there. If a few of my orcs go that way and she takes them, no matter. I got a ton. Don't care at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's also been eating orcs a lot, but Gollum has now, you know, Gollum has finally paid off on his friendship. He's brought her sweeter meats in the hobbits, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And Gollum's creepy, creepy plan is that, once she eats them, I'm going to find the ring in their bones. Or I would kind of assume you might have to go through her
fecal matter.
Mm-hmm. Or her vomit also, that was mentioned here.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too. Yeah, I don't know. That seems like a creepy concept to me to, you know, you were traveling with these people for days, and now, you know, you're pretty set, gung-ho, and ready to pick through their bones just to find the ring.
It's like, yeah, oh, yeah.
Gosh. You are miserable, and mm-hmm. you are...
One curveball question I have is, like, presumably Gollum got off and was not eaten by her, even though she eats everything else that goes through her lair, because he said he would come back and bring food. And she wants some hobbits to eat, or something living like that.
Yeah.
Hobbits aren't that big, and there's only two of them. Is it really that worth it for her to not eat Gollum for the idea of getting to eat two hobbits sometime later on?
Well, hold on. You're looking at this the wrong way. What is there to eat on Gollum? That guy is skin and bones, 500 years old. You know, if she's tired of orcs, you know, Gollum is just like, I can just have orcs instead of you. Orcs probably taste better than Gollum, I would assume.
Maybe so. Okay.
Because he's so worn down. And then it's like, you know, you let him go because he praises you. You know, he's kind of funny. And then, you know, maybe prays that, you know, someday he'll bring back something better.
Okay.
And that is what's happened. You know, I don't know if that was part of the deal when he got out years ago when he had met her, but this is what's happening now. So.
Okay.
All right. Anyways, though, last key thing. Apparently, nobody had ever escaped from her before. This is the first time anybody's gotten out of her webs, you know, and that's probably because nobody had an elvish sword like Sting. So let's go back to the story. Again, Frodo has thrown all caution to the wind. He's running away as fast as he can. Sam is still more cautious, running after him. But he sees that Frodo's sword is glowing blue. And I think this time it's not really just the edges. I think it's just all around. It's pretty damn blue, which mm-hmm. means there's tons of orcs around. Plus, Frodo, you know, I think when he's got the blue sword, that also implies it's like, well, you're easy to spot, dude. You know, yeah. you got like a blue lightsaber, basically. and, you know, it's nighttime about, but there's still a light coming from that tower that Frodo is about to attempt to try to run past, is what it seems like, you know. Meanwhile, Sam is the one that has the file, because Frodo passed it off to him when he cut the webs.
Mm-hmm.
And so Sam puts it away, wraps himself up in the elven cloak, and he chases after Frodo as quick as he can. But a little way up, to his left, he sees that Shelob, the monstrous spider, is up ahead. And do you want to take that description?
Most like a spider she was, but huger than the great hunting beasts, and more terrible than they because of the evil purpose in her remorseless eyes. Those same eyes that he had thought daunted and defeated, there they were lit with a fell light again, clustering in her outthrust head. Great horns she had, and behind her short, stalk-like neck was her huge, swollen body, a vast, bloated bag, swaying and sagging between her legs. Its great bulk was black, blotched with livid marks, but the belly underneath was pale and luminous and gave forth a stench. Her legs were bent with great knobbed joints high above her back, and hairs that stuck out like steel spines, and at each leg's end there was a claw.
Okay. Alright, so now we got a full picture of what we're dealing with.
Uh-huh.
Does not seem pleasant.
No, it sounds terrible in every way. Notably, she's like, it's like this, it's a kind of interesting, the descriptions are like a mix of this, like, brutal killing machine thing with like spikes and claws and all that mixed with like a rotting sack, like very the descriptions are like, you know, she's like old and the words are like swollen, bloated,
right,
swaying, yeah, sagging, blotched. So yeah, it's a mix of negative connotations, but it's like she's not just like some hardened evil thing.
Okay, so she's between Frodo and Sam, and she's chasing down Frodo, who he basically seems to not be aware of her. You can read it for yourself if you disagree, or you could tell me if you disagree, Clifford. But it doesn't seem like Frodo's very aware of her.
He's kind of in the zone right now.
Yeah, he's running his last 100 meters of a mile race or something. Mm-hmm. And now he's without the file again. Remember that, because Sam still has it. Yeah, then we get to the big finish, like, right away here. So why don't let's just do this in full. Why don't you start us off?
Swiftly he ran, but Shelob was swifter. In a few great leaps, she would have him. Sam gasped and gathered all his remaining breath to shout.
Look out behind, he yelled. Look out, master. I'm...
But suddenly his cry was stifled. A long, clammy hand went over his mouth and another caught him by the neck while something wrapped itself around his leg. Taken off his guard, he toppled backwards into the arms of his attacker.
Got him, hissed Gollum in his ear. At last, my precious, we've got him. Yes, the nasty hobbit. We takes this one. She'll get the other. Oh yes, Shelob will get him. Not Smeagol, he promised. He won't hurt master at all. But he's got you, you nasty, filthy little sneak. He spat on Sam's neck.
Fury at the treachery, and desperation at the delay when his master was in deadly peril, gave to Sam a sudden violence and strength that was far beyond anything that Gollum had expected from this slow, stupid hobbit, as he thought him. Not Gollum himself could have twisted more quickly or more fiercely. His hold on Sam's mouth slipped, and Sam ducked and lunged forward again, trying to tear away from the grip on his neck. His sword was still in his hand, and on his left arm, hanging by its thong, was Faramir's staff. Desperately, he tried to turn and stab his enemy, but Gollum was too quick. His long right arm shot out, and he grabbed Sam's wrist. His fingers were like a vice. Slowly and relentlessly, he bent the hand down and forward, till with a cry of pain, Sam released the sword and it fell to the ground. And all the while, Gollum's other hand was tightening on Sam's throat. Then Sam played his last trick. With all his strength, he pulled away and got his feet firmly planted. Then suddenly he drove his legs against the ground and with his whole force hurtled himself backwards. Not expecting even this simple trick from Sam, Gollum fell over with Sam on top, and he received the weight of the sturdy hobbit on his stomach. A sharp hiss came out of him, and for a second his hand upon Sam's throat loosened, but his fingers still gripped the sword hand. Sam tore himself forward and away and stood up, then quickly he wheeled away to his right, pivoted on the wrist held by Gollum. Laying hold of the staff with his left hand, Sam swung it up, and down it came with a whistling crack on Gollum's outstretched arm, just below the elbow.
With a squeal, Gollum let go. Then Sam waded in. Not waiting to change the staff from left to right, he dealt another savage blow. Quick as a snake, Gollum slithered aside, and the stroke aimed at his head fell across his back. The staff cracked and broke. That was enough for him. Grabbing from behind was an old game of his, and seldom had he failed in it. But this time, misled by spite, he had made the mistake of speaking and gloating before he had both hands on his victim's neck. Everything had gone wrong with his beautiful plan since that horrible light had so unexpectedly appeared in the darkness. And now he was face to face with a furious enemy, little less than his own size. This fight was not for him. Sam swept his sword from the ground and raised it. Gollum squealed, and springing aside on all fours, he jumped away in one big bound like a frog. Before Sam could reach him, he was off, running with amazing speed back towards the tunnel. Sword in hand, Sam went after him. For a moment, he had forgotten everything else but the red fury in his brain and desire to kill Gollum. But before he could overtake him, Gollum was gone. Then, as the dark hole stood before him and the stench came out to meet him, like a clap of thunder, the thought of Frodo and the monster smote upon Sam's mind. He spun around and rushed rapidly up the path, calling and calling his master's name. He was too late. So far, Gollum's plan had succeeded.
Mm. Damn. Big chapter.
The betrayal comes at last.
Yeah. Thoughts on that? Let's just wrap this up quick, too, because, you know, this, like, it really doesn't even break. Like, the next chapter, we just jump into it. You're going to have to wait until the next episode, but, yeah. Last thoughts?
Well... We've been suspecting Gollum of things for a long time, and Sam in particular, and not coincidentally, Sam is the one who gets attacked by Gollum in this evil plot. So,
yeah, it seemed Gollum didn't think he was breaking his promise if he was going to have Shelob take care of Frodo, and, you know, he gets full rights to take care of Sam. This is what he's been waiting for all book, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
But Sam, so pissed off, so ready for this moment, finally gets to give Gollum everything he suspected he deserves. Because in this moment he does. And he just lets him have it. Gollum was too foolish. You he was gloating, as Token explicitly says. And yeah, Sam just, he basically attacked him from behind. And so when he gets him, like, he's got him around his neck and he's, you know, he's holding on to his backside, almost giving him like a piggyback. Sam just jumps backwards to fall on top of him, knock the wind out of him, and then he can start beating him up from there. Also, Faramir gave him those staffs. It was that staff that he ends up just hammering Gollum with and breaking over his back. Right. So, I mean, that's the that's at least one purpose to such a gift.
Definitely.
But yeah, so I don't know. This is also a cliffhanger here because we don't know what happened to Frodo. Sam's got to go find out. He came back to his senses right at the end there. Gollum's delayed him, so we'll see if he can protect Frodo. We got one chapter left of Two Towers. Chapter left. Yeah, we'll see what happens.
I've got one last question. A hypothetical. Yeah. So they make it out of the hole after cutting through the webs. They're making a sprint across this little open clearing, even though there's orcs, an orc guard tower nearby, or orcs somewhere nearby, which Sam knows because Frodo's sword is lit up. And they don't see Shelob.
Yeah.
And Sam's still holding this light up, the Galadriel file.
Yeah.
The second Sam puts the light away because he's worried about being seen by orcs, Shelob comes out, right?
Yeah, he puts it away when she comes out. I thought that was just more so you just put it away just because it's practical.
Hold on, let me read one thing. Hardly had Sam hidden the light of the star glass when she came. Anyways, it just made me think, like, what if Sam hadn't put away the light? It was bright enough to scare her off in the tunnel. If he had kept holding it, would it have blocked Shelob from coming out of her lair?
Would things have played out
any differently there if he hadn't put it away at that moment?
I feel like she still would have run over to Frodo because he's away from the light, you know, because she got in between them.
Okay. Gollum would have gone for Sam anyway.
And I thought it was more so he just put it away just because it's like, that's practical. You know, like, first of all, it's, you have a free hand for whatever you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, people in the tower won't see this bright-ass light that scared away Shelob. Because, you know, it's a really good thing. You know, like, this is how they got out of this tunnel, was that they had the light. But it's also like, well, you don't want orcs to freaking be aware that you're there because they can see the light. You know? So, I don't know. It's one of those. I don't know. It's an interesting question. Not really sure. What happened as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, who knows? Yeah, with that, I think next chapter, just expect us to just jump right in again because it's another good one. You know, we got to see what happens. This spider is not dealt with fully. So. Mm-hmm. All right, Clifford, we're back again for the ending here. So we're finishing up the end of chapter 9, so, you know, that ends with Sam's, you know, fighting Gollum, and then he's running up to Frodo, who, you know, Shelob was chasing after him. So this was quite the cliffhanger chapter, and, yeah, we should probably just keep it quick, because it was just one huge action scene kind of thing. But how you been?
I'm not as epic as this episode was, but I've been pretty good. How about yourself?
I've been pretty good, yeah. Anything cool happening?
No, frankly not. yeah. Honestly, nothing very fun to report.
Dude, guess what happened in the cycling world this weekend? Dude, so Matthew Vanderpool, Wout van Aert, two of my favorite riders, you know, the big cyclocross guys. So they went to this really fun race, and it's a fun race because it's super beautiful in Tuscany. Okay. And then it finishes in Siena, and it's super scenic and perfect. And, and 30% of it is off-road. Like, they're just on these white roads, which is where this race gets its name, Strada Bianchi.
But it's not actually a cyclocross race.
No, it's not. It's a road race. So, but anyways, it was no surprise when Vanderpool, Van Aert, and then Alaphilippe, who's, you know, one of my guys, he was there too, and then a couple other guys. But then the surprising part was in that group too, it's like came down to like eight guys that are in the finale here that are still left. And two of them were Egan Bernal and Tadej Pogacar, who are the past two Tour de France winners. And it's like, What are they doing here? What is it? What are they doing here with Matthew Vanderpool?
Like, as in hanging out at this random
yeah.
race?
Yeah, they're not supposed to be good at these kinds of things. And then it's like they're there. It was pretty sweet. It was pretty exciting. And then Vanderpool just was a rocket ship. He just launched away. It was twice. He did it twice. It was very impressive. Like, to say he just attacked the other guys, it's like, no, that's not good enough. This was, you know, Cape Canaveral rocket launch stuff.
Cool.
Yeah. I don't know. That's the only thing going on with me besides whatever other hobbies I have going on as I've been working on them. I've been listening to Tchaikovsky's Complete Works. I'm going through everything that I haven't listened to. Man, that dude, he gets to my soul. he's the man. He is the man. I think that's Beethoven, cool. I think you got to say, is the greatest classical. And Mozart and Bach are probably better than Tchaikovsky, but Tchaikovsky's my fave. What a guy. What a guy.
Sweet.
Yeah, maybe I'll play it at some point, but I don't think it would be appropriate to play Tchaikovsky after talking about fighting a spider for an hour. So, All right. Yeah, why don't we just end it there then?
Okay. Thanks, y'all.